When Jesus' friends get sick, does he come immediately? In the Bible, we have one clear example where he didn't. He waited for 4 days. Welcome to Probe. I'm Alden Thompson, your host. With me are my conversation partners, Paul Dibdahl, Bruce Johansson, as we take an important story in the Gospel of John, the death of Lazarus. Now, I'd like to just jump in that. Why in the world didn't Jesus come and encourage his friends? Lazarus was sick, and he just dilly-dallied. Mm-hmm. Why? Mm-hmm. What was going on here?
Well, we can make some interpretive guesses as to why, some background sorts of things that might help us. Maybe we should go to the end of the story. When he raised Lazarus from the dead, people believed. Many people believed. But there were also many who turned around and decided they needed to destroy him because this was just too much. They disbelieved powerfully. It could be there was a popular belief which probably has its origins in the Jewish contact with Zoroastrianism during the Babylonian captivity, that the soul hovers near the body for about 3 days, and on the fourth day it departs. So there is a sense in which a person may not be dead yet.
You're dead, but after 3 days,
you are certainly dead.
Okay. Yeah.
That might be a background, and then Jesus waited. He knew that he was going to do this for Lazarus.
Mm-hmm.
And he says Lazarus is not dead, is not sick. This illness is not unto death. I'm sorry, I got it wrong there. But it is for the glory of God.
Yes.
So there's an intention going on there.
Now, incidentally, I think it's helpful to remind us that just because Jesus raised someone from the dead is not proof of his essential divinity.
No.
Because you have Old Testament examples of where
yes.
the prophets raised
That's
people
right.
from the dead, and you have Peter doing that afterwards. And how many resurrections do we know that Jesus actually performed?
There are three specific yeah. individual accounts. Lazarus, Jairus' daughter, and the widow's son.
The widow's son.
Yeah.
Now, Paul, you were talking about some interesting commonalities of all three of those. Again, you can ask the question, why was Jesus so cautious and careful? There are lots of people he could have raised.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, it seems to me, as you look at the three stories, a couple of them are young people.
Uh-huh.
And that may include Lazarus, even. Because when we look at the living situation here with Lazarus and Mary and Martha, they're... A couple of things that should jump out at us. Jewish young ladies married generally at a very young age, and yet we have no mention of any husbands here of either mm-hmm. Mary or Martha. We don't have parents mentioned.
That's right.
We have three siblings living together,
mm-hmm.
perhaps quite young.
Mm-hmm.
We would probably, well, again, we don't know for sure here, but at an age that we might consider children. That makes Lazarus... in some ways, even more important, because to mm-hmm. lose their brother would have been, a tremendous loss for
they
them.
Lose their
protection. He is an only brother,
That's
at
right.
least in the picture. And that tends to, that holds with the widow's son at Nain as well, the only son that she had mm-hmm. remaining.
And of course, in this case, there's at least one Christian tradition, not the only one, but there's one Christian tradition which identifies Mary Magdalene with Mary Bethany.
Mm-hmm.
And if that were true, then she would be on the wild side.
Mm-hmm.
You know, have had some real moral challenges. Mm-hmm. And for her to be left now without her brother, mm-hmm. that would really be problematic.
If we have three orphans,
yes.
then that may even help to explain the wild side as well.
Yeah. Sure.
It might not have been wild. It might have been a way to find food.
Necessity. Yeah.
Yeah, just necessity. Yeah. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. So, Jesus delayed. There may have been reasons for it. There were reasons for it, even if Jesus did not make those perfectly clear. And then he raises Lazarus from the dead. Now, part of that story is as Jesus works through this, Bruce, I think you were commenting that both of the sisters admonished Jesus.
You get the exact same line. Lord, if you had been here, my brother would not have died.
Huh.
It's almost a rebuke. They've seen Jesus heal before. And I think what Paul is saying here is if you had been here, we'd still have our protector and our provider and a man in the house who keeps our honor and keeps us safe in society.
Yeah, there's a line in this connection where Jesus comes into this. He hears this passion from both sisters, probably a rebuke, as much as they may not have wanted to give us a rebuke, but if you had been here, you see. And then in the midst of all this, scripture, you have the shortest scripture in the Bible, I think. Jesus wept.
Yeah.
As the NRSV has it, Jesus began to weep. Mm-hmm. Now, the interpretation in the text is, the Jews said, see how he loved him. Sometimes we have attempted to interpret this as Jesus really wasn't worried about the situation. He wasn't really concerned about the individuals, but more about the loss of the Jewish nation. Mm-hmm. My inclination would be to say that I think this is genuine Jesus involvement with his friends. Now, shout me down if you think I'm wrong.
I don't think you're wrong. I think that can be a definite point. It's interesting that this whole story begins with, you know, the disciples really not wanting to go back to that area because they are sure that Jesus will meet with death. And they, too, they protest.
We'll go and die with him.
Yes. Yeah. Go and die with him. Okay, let's go and die with him.
Suicide.
It's kind of an ironical, little sarcastic remark.
Yeah.
Okay, if he's going to go back there, we'll go and die with him. The irony is that because of healing or raising Lazarus from the dead, the leaders plan to kill him. And I'm wondering if Jesus didn't realize that somehow Lazarus foreshadowed his own death. And that his own, that his weeping might have been also a part of that whole thing.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. There's people who think that might have been a dimension in here, too.
Well, you clearly have in John, Jesus knows where he's going.
Mm-hmm.
It's clear in his own mind. And yet, as a human being, seeing that, that's got to be an agonizing situation where you see it coming.
Yeah.
Your convictions tell you on one side. And yet, when you get into the garden, seeing not included in John, you know, if possible, let this cup pass from me.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's got to be an enormous tension if you know that you're marching into your death.
In fact, there's some who have suggested that statement from the garden is reflected in Jesus wept.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Ah, that's fascinating. Yeah. Now, moving on, when Lazarus was raised, that kind of was a catalyst for the Jewish opposition to Jesus. They determined that they were going to kill both Lazarus and Jesus, lest this disease resurrection spread further. And you have this amazing statement, which John quotes from Caiaphas in chapter 11. Caiaphas apparently says, well, don't you think that it is better for you to have one man die for the people than to have the whole nation destroyed? And in verse 48, it's an interesting lead into that. He says, if we let him go on like this, everyone will believe in him, and the Romans will come and destroy both our holy place and our nation. Now, John is writing this after the Romans have come and destroyed the holy place and our nation. And then this interpretation from the John's Gospel, verse 51, Caiaphas did not say this on his own, but being high priest that year, he prophesied that Jesus was about to die for the nation, and not only for the nation only, but to gather into one the dispersed children of God.
And therein is an example of John's irony.
Yes.
He loves irony.
Yes.
Here's Jesus' greatest opponent being a prophet of what's going to happen. I mean, if that isn't irony, I don't know what is.
Incidentally, my own interest in how God reveals himself, I think you take a passage like this, along with the Balaam story in the Old Testament, that could very easily lead you to an idea of verbal inspiration, where, you know, God can speak through the donkey, he can speak through Balaam, he can speak through Caiaphas, and it's a dictation theory, which I think does happen sometimes, but that certainly isn't the norm.
That's right.
But I think the power of this passage is really something coming after the temple was destroyed.
Now, there's another piece here. There is a feast, and Jesus attends. This is now chapter 12. 6 days before the Passover, Jesus came to Bethany, the home of Lazarus. There they gave a dinner for him. Martha served, and Lazarus was one of those at the table with him. Mary took a pound of costly perfume, made of pure nard, anointed Jesus' feet, and wiped them with her hair. What was Jesus' reaction to this?
Well, he defends her.
He absolutely defends her.
She's accused of being wasteful, and Judas objects to what's going on. Obviously, it's too perfume's too expensive. Could have sold it and given the money to the poor. And Jesus' response: "Leave her alone. Leave her alone."
I think these two stories are connected: the raising of Lazarus and Mary's act of incredible love to Jesus, which gets overtones of a preparation for his burial.
Yeah.
And the priests are in there again and planning to kill also Lazarus and not just Jesus. I think this act of this woman is an act of... I think she felt a little bit bad about what she said. And now this is her way of coming to Jesus and thanking him.
But now let me play the devil's advocate here. Mm-hmm. 300, that's a full year's wage.
Mm-hmm. Pretty costly stuff.
Isn't that just being a bit? Wasn't Judas on to something that this could have been given to the poor?
It could have.
Oh, yeah.
It could have.
Oh, yes.
It was
Bruce,
a lot of money.
Yeah. Bruce, you've been to India. There's always more poor. Always more poor.
They're always more poor, absolutely. It's probably the most disturbing thing that one experiences in going to a country like that and other countries.
Yeah. In some of the Synoptic Gospel, it says, the poor you have always with you, mm-hmm. but you won't always have me. Now, I'd mm-hmm. like to move away from Jesus' story mm-hmm. and wondering if there isn't even an application for us. Now, we don't have the opportunity to anoint Jesus before his death. That's not possible. Mm-hmm. But is there a principle here of paying more attention to the living mm-hmm. while they're alive mm-hmm. rather than waiting till they're dead?
Yeah. It's a great message. Yeah.
We unfortunately sometimes do not speak words of appreciation until it's too late. And we shouldn't wait until it is too late. We should offer bouquets to the living. I've heard that phrase before.
Yeah.
And it's true.
I think if this is the same Mary Magdalene, once again, this is Jesus reaching out in love to the marginalized. If she was an orphan, if she was a woman of the wrong kind of reputation, and here she comes and lavishes on Jesus. I mean, you can imagine the feelings involved. Other versions of this story talk about her washing his feet with her hair.
Yes.
I mean, that gets a little bit too personal.
Yeah.
And, but boy, Jesus sure defends her.
Mm-hmm. But you know, that ties in with John. Every once in a while, he throws in these stories where Jesus just recognized amazing prodigality. The wedding of Cana.
Yeah.
Like another one. Mm-hmm. Just enjoy life. And here, this full year salary. I think we need to recognize that. Well, our time is up. Thank you, Paul and Bruce. They'll be with us again next week as we continue on our discussion. And next time we go to Jesus' gift of the washing of the feet. My thanks to Jim Bryson, our program engineer, and to all of you for listening in. The Probe. I'm Alton Thompson.
You've been listening to Probe, a production of the School of Theology at Walla Walla College and KGTS-FM. To order a copy of today's broadcast, you may call 509-527-2194 or email probe@wwc.edu. Join us again next week at the same time for Probe.